Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So, you know, the day after the debate, you hear the whining, you hear the complaining. And I got to be honest, last night watching the fake news on Fox, the outreach to the African-American community comments that they had were just beyond laughable. And look, his outreach of, hey, what do you got to lose? Is questionable at best. And as someone who looks at political campaigns and has advised some in the past, that would be kind of the last thing that I would advise a campaign to do, which explains his whopping 1% voter turnout for him on that issue. But here to talk a little bit about what's going on. In fact, they have launched a presidential bigotry watch. The network Lobby for Catholic Social Justice, they've launched this and also doing a tour. And Sister Simone Campbell, their executive director, she's going to be in the Harrisburg area. I believe it's tomorrow at the Unitarian Church in Harrisburg at 1280 Clover Lane to talk about election 2016 and the title being Working to Mend the Gaps. I'm kind of interested to see how we're going to do that. Sister Simone, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, so glad to be with you and looking forward to being in Harrisburg tomorrow.
Yeah, so how are we going to do that? I mean, you know, I watched fake news on Fox last night. I've had conversations with Trump supporters. It seems like we live in completely different worlds. How do we mend that gap?
Well, you're absolutely right. We're just in silos where we don't communicate. And one of our key ways of mending the gap first is to begin to have serious conversations with each other, more about where is the common good. We're proposing 7 basic policies that we think could heal the income and wealth gap and the access gaps in our nation. But the first step is a step towards each other instead of a step away from each other, and that is just talking to each other about things that matter. And then we can deal with policy after we begin a conversation. But we're out of practice of talking to each other.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I mean, I had an electrician come in and do some work for us, and we were like on different planets. And he was shocked that I was willing to look, I'm interested in your thoughts, and shocked that we could have a civil conversation. And sadly, I think you're right. We're out of practice in having those civil conversations.
Absolutely. We were just meeting with a group of folks that are doing door knocking here in the Philadelphia area. And they're just encouraging people to vote. That's their engagement. And what they're finding is people are, one, surprised that somebody comes to their door to encourage voting, and two, pretty apathetic for the most part about, like, oh, it doesn't matter. Oh, I don't really care. Oh, they just yell at each other. And what we know is that democracy is hard work. It requires us to stay engaged. And early on, our founding fathers and mothers of our country wondered if democracy would succeed. Well, I hate to say this, Rick, but right now, I think the question is still out. Will we succeed? Can we stay engaged?
It's a good question.
It's urgently required. Yeah.
And at the end of it, what's happened, and this has been, you know, years in the making, is we've been divided up into camps, be it, you know, male, female, white collar, blue collar, you know, green collar, pink collar, ring around the collar, whatever. But we've been divided up, white, black, Hispanic, whatever. We've been pitted against one another. And it's, to me, you know, I think if we could somehow go back to the old labor frame of an injury to one being an injury to all, I think we'd be a whole lot better off.
Right. And I think you put your finger on something that's really important, which is our wealth as a nation has allowed us to focus on being individualistic. And what labor knows is that we're in this together. And it is something in our culture that we have to reclaim. That it is about the common good, that if you do better, I do better. I met this wonderful young woman at a executive order signing ceremony, Robin, and Robin came to that signing ceremony to celebrate that her friend was going to get a raise. And what she told me was she knew that if her friend got a raise, she would eventually get a raise herself in her minimum wage job in Northern Virginia. But I thought Robin's awareness that what's good for her friend can directly impact her later on. But we've sort of lost that idea that we're in this together, that we all have to work together to make our nation what we want.
Yeah, and I look at the debate on Monday night, and I got to be honest, you can't have two very different candidates from completely different camps on a vast majority of issues, and race relations being one of those front and center. And as you guys have launched this bigotry watch, I mean, some of the rhetoric, some of the things I've seen, not just the other day, I talked about a story up in Bloomsburg at the fair where they had the Nazi flag out and the Trump flag next to each other.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's scary. We are truly living in scary times.
Right. And fear is a result of individualism. But the unacceptable conversations of candidates for high office is finally what got us to do this Bigotry Watch campaign. We said that people of faith needed to stand up. It's not about partisanship. It's not about whether I agree with you on policy or not. But what is acceptable public conversation for the common good? And some of the comments that are being made are just totally unacceptable. So we said we were going to stand up and stick our necks out and say, no, this is unacceptable. Come back to the common ground. It's not about political correctness. Somebody once has said that that's really a negative thing. No, it's about basic civility. Your mother's taught you better than this, and behave yourself. No, so we're trying to say that our nation will be better if we stay in the commons where we can have civil conversation, as you point out, and move forward together on the issue. So it's a nonpartisan. We're watching all four of the candidates, and we will call them out as we go forward.
So as you looked at Monday night, what did you see what did you see coming out of Monday night?
Well, Monday night, I actually found it fairly horrifying because both candidates bring in a white privilege. And I was struck that Secretary Clinton was able to do an analysis about implicit bias and a worry about the unintended discrimination and the intended discrimination that happens. She spoke very knowledgeably of that. But Mr. Trump was totally oblivious, kept talking about how wealthy he was, all of the things that he did, and used as the one example his of encouraging good race relations that he had one country club that admitted African Americans to membership.
That speaks horrifying.
One, in his lack of awareness of how exclusionary he was, and two, in his basic sensitivity for the needs of the people of our nation. So we issued a statement saying this was shockingly inappropriate.
So when you look at a statement like that by Trump, because there are some who would label him as racist, and I'm sure he believes that he is not. And look, I've got tons of friends who I think are fairly racist, and they tell me they're not. Is it just this idea of white privilege, or do you think it's something more?
Well, I think what goes with white privilege is this thought that because I'm white, I'm better. And that those who aren't as smart, aren't as accomplished, aren't as rich as a person with walking in white skin is. But what I have learned is that is a privilege to which I'm not entitled. It just happens in society that we're given it. And I think his lack of awareness of the privilege he has, the fact that he was saying, he got a $14 million loan from his dad when he was a young person to get started in his, property industry. And he says, well, that was a small loan. That was like privilege. And then that he says that he's smart because he doesn't pay any taxes. That's smart. That's good business. He's not investing in our nation, in the needs for all of the services that we have that he has used to get rich off of. He doesn't contribute. So I think his privilege puts him really outside the scope of participating in the common good. But he doesn't see that.
Yeah, $14 million. Pocket change. A little bit of pocket change.
Yeah, a little bit of pocket. $14 million. I could use with that kind of pocket change, and I'm sure you could too.
I could, but you know, more important than that is the part that, and as you point out, it's the privilege part. The Trump name, you know, at that time carried an awful lot of weight. That invisible capital that you can't buy, he had just for being born to the right parents. That most of us, and look, I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. I was one of the few white kids in a major minority community. So I learned very young that the only color that really mattered, in my view, was green, because we were all poor. I mean, we were all dirt poor. And at the end of it, the reality is you're right. By me being white, I did have some advantages that my black friends didn't have as we grew up.
Right. And I can relate to that. I grew up in Long Beach, California, and some of the similar stories, but the expectation. One of the things I've come to realize walking around in white skin is that, you know, when I walk into a store, I am waited on quickly, and not everyone is. People don't expect me to shoplift, so I don't get followed around. Or a bunch of my African American friends do.
But you're also a nun.
Yeah,
but I mean, come on, you're also Sister Campbell. I mean, yeah, the reality.
Oh yeah, but people don't know that. I mean, you know, just on an ordinary day, I jump in. I was just in a CVS yesterday, and you know, trying to pick up some things that I needed because, well, I'm traveling. I forgot my toothpaste, so I had to go get it. And you know, people don't know that I'm a sister in that way, and so but they respect me because I am a person they expect to respect. That isn't always true based on colors of skin.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Sister Simone Campbell. She's the executive director of the Network Lobby. You want to check out their website, networklobby.org. Tomorrow night, I believe they're going to have an event in the Harrisburg area, the 29th of September. The workshop is Election 2016, Working to Mend the Gaps. It's at the Unitarian Church there at 1280 Clover Lane. So what are you expecting to come out of tomorrow night, and what are you hoping comes out of these workshops that you're having across the country?
Well, the first thing we do is we explore what is the reality in the gaps in our society, and we have this little exercise of a human bar graph about income and wealth disparity over the last 34 years. But then what we do is engage in conversations at tables where everybody can talk to each other, because we think that, as we started, that's the anchor of creating a different future. Talk to each other not about, oh, woe is us and how terrible things are. Rather, what would Harrisburg look like if we mended these gaps? Because I think one of the big problems is we don't have a vision for change. We don't have the idea that it can be different. And so we're trying to generate creativity, engagement, a vision of something different. Because what we do know is these gaps that we currently have, we're not always there. The fact is, policies that we passed and implemented, both at the federal and state and local level, have created the gaps we have. Well, the good news in that, Rick, is if policies created this mess, the good news is policies can change it. If we have a big enough imagination together, to make those kind of changes. So that's what we're trying to stir up. We've done this in a few places. There have been lively conversations. It's really been engaging. So I hope some of your listeners will come on out.
I hope folks will take a look at it. We'll get a link at therickSmithShow.com of how you can get more information. Just click on Sister Simone Campbell's name. It'll take you right there. But, you know, in looking at this, you know, just the idea of people talking to each other. I mean, neighbors don't talk to each other anymore. We've become an insular society where, you know, we follow our own ideological leanings or our own religious leanings, and never shall we meet others. And I got to be honest, that's not good for, one, our democracy, and it's not good for our country.
Absolutely. You know, we were in Little Rock, Arkansas last year, and we did a similar kind of roundtable conversation, and seven people at a roundtable discovered they were all from the same neighborhood, and no one knew the other person.
Wow.
And when they looked at it, what they found out was they discovered that they think it's because there's garages attached to houses with automatic garage door openers, and in Little Rock, it's air conditioning that makes the difference, and private backyards. So nobody sits on front porches anymore. And so this group decided that their action following our meeting was they were just going to sit on their front porch and wave at people as they went by and try to figure out who lives in our neighborhood. But you're absolutely right. We're just siloed and separate. we've got to break out of this.
Yeah, I'm with you. If we want to have functional government, if we want to have good policy, I think that's a first step. And I hope folks will turn out tomorrow night to the Unitarian Church there at 1280 Clover Lane in Harrisburg to participate in the event and begin to heal and mend and draw us together.
It'll be exciting to have everyone.
That'd be great. Sister Campbell, I appreciate you taking time for us. Best of luck.
Thank you so much.
Great, good stuff. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Controversial, thought-provoking, opinionated. Rick Smith.